This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When the coronavirus first reached the U.S., it swept through a nursing home in Kirkland, Washington. Months later, nursing homes still pose risks for becoming coronavirus hotspots. Short-term patients and workers can unknowingly carry the virus to and from the facilities. Don Taylor is a professor of public policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. He researches aging and comparative health systems. Welcome back, Don.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Remind us again why nursing homes have become COVID-19 hotspots.
Well, nursing homes, in many ways, were like dry kindling that had been soaked with kerosene waiting for a spark. The novel coronavirus was the spark. And my point there is that our long-term care system has been underinvested in for many years. So the coronavirus didn't create this problem. It just laid it to bear. But the reason more than half the deaths in North Carolina have occurred to folks living in skilled nursing facilities is because people living there are elderly and they tend to have lots of underlying health conditions.
So you collect those people with the conditions who are most vulnerable, put them in one place. Obviously, that almost by definition becomes a hotspot should the virus come alive in that area. But then what compounds that is the fact that it's harder to lock them down. People are coming and going all the time, including some of the patients who are there maybe for rehab and in and out. So give us of that picture.
Yes, the best way to think about a skilled nursing facility, which is a subset of nursing homes, is that you have workers who are moving in and out each day, obviously the shift workers. Those workers are at risk of occupational exposure to the virus, but they are also at risk of both bringing the virus into the nursing home, but also of then taking it out of the nursing home to the community, to their families, or to the people in their neighborhoods. At the same time, as you mentioned, skilled nursing facilities are crucial parts of the hospital care system in the United States. People, for example, think if your grandmother has a fall, breaks her hip gets replaced, she needs to go to a skilled nursing facility to get rehab for 10 days. She could be bringing the virus in. Similarly, she could be contracting the virus while in the skilled nursing facility, and then she could take home with her when she's discharged, because most skilled nursing facilities commingle these short-term rehab patients with longer-term patients who are at even higher risk.
I'm wondering if we're seeing any impact of that now. Are we going to see older folks continue to go to nursing homes for short-term recovery? Is that becoming an issue for people?
I think it is. If you like around Duke, there's discussion about obviously in the earlier spring, like most of the large health systems, Duke started or stopped doing so-called elective procedures. But many of these procedures are very important. Think of things like certain heart procedures, joint replacements to deal with chronic pain, probably some cancer surgeries were delayed. And if patients don't feel confident or comfortable that they can go safely for, let's say, a 5 to 10 day stay for rehab after a surgery, then I think they're going to be delaying medical care, and that's going to lead to problems downstream. So many folks may think, I never go to a nursing home. I don't know anybody who does, but nursing homes are both the place where the most vulnerable members of society are living, but they also really can serve as what I think of as wells of infection, meaning it's because people move in and out, it's a way that if we don't get control of the virus in these facilities, I don't really think we're going to be able to control the virus, nationally.
Right. So, and we can talk about that in a minute, but I'm now thinking just as a very practical measure, if someone has had surgery and they are a little older and they need rehab, it's an essential part of the recovery, right? I mean, whether it's for mobility or for, recovering your systems, does that mean more in-home care, if that were possible, would be advisable for people because they're moving around less, although they're still coming in? They're still coming in contact with practitioners. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, one of the one of the things that are being looked at are what are alternative care models for what we call post-acute care, and that is the short-term care after a hospitalization. Someone who has a stable enough home life or a living situation and someone from a family, for example, who's able to stay with them all the time, probably could safely do some of the rehab at home that they would have otherwise gotten in skilled nursing facilities. Obviously, if you imagine the example I gave of an elderly woman breaking her hip, if that person is a widow who lives alone, that's not going to be an option. So all of these, everything about the coronavirus is going to be worse for people with, you know, less resources, essentially.
All right, let's go back to the skilled nursing care facilities themselves. Who are the workers who are working at these facilities?
Yeah, almost always women, many times immigrant. They often are working multiple jobs to make ends meet because the wages are relatively low. They don't tend to have paid time off, and that probably is part of what got the Kirkland Nursing Home outbreak started out in Washington State. These people, the workers are disproportionately African American or Hispanic. So these folks are essential. We've declared them as essential workers, and indeed they are. They are not paid as such, and they are, as I said, they're at great occupational exposure risk to the coronavirus. So when I said earlier that coronavirus didn't create the problems, this has always been a difficult part of our healthcare system. The coronavirus really just exposed that, and I guess in many ways you could think of it as having exploited it. So I just want to be very clear when I say that workers are at risk, but they're also a risk of spreading the virus. That is true epidemiologically, but these people are deserving, these women mostly are deserving of our thanks, and we need to protect them better with better PPE, paid time off, higher wages.
Well, all of that, and of course the other of the many shortcomings in our medical industry in America is the fact that people who are at lower incomes have higher risks because of the comorbidities, the pre-existing conditions that are there in larger percentages for low wealth people because of the many failures of our medical system, right? So you're looking at people who are already vulnerable because of their incomes. Most likely, the statistics show, have pre-existing conditions.
Yes, and just to provide a little, context there, I think there's been it's been shown that Black Americans are much more likely to be dying from COVID-19, and folks say, you know, what is happening? But people who have been studying this, this is a very familiar story, and I think there are really three basic reasons. The first is they're at more risk of occupational exposure because they have these difficult jobs that mean that they can't really shelter in place. Second, you know, there's reams and decades of research showing that Black Americans are mistreated, not treated the same in the health system. We don't have as much, you know, we're still getting early evidence with coronavirus, but there's evidence of delayed testing and less likely to get aggressive care. So this is it's a very familiar pattern. This is something that has been a longstanding problem. Again, that this has just brought to the fore.
So how might nursing homes trigger a second wave of the coronavirus? Is that likely later this year or possible?
Yeah, when I first started writing about triggering a second wave, I assumed that we were coming out of the first wave, but we really are sort of plateaued now. So I'm not really sure we're out of the first wave. It's almost like we've hit a new normal. So maybe it's a second wave or maybe it's a spike. But the point is, hopefully there is going to be a seasonality to this and maybe the rates will die down. But until we have asymptomatic testing of workers and certainly of new entrants for these short stays in and out of skilled nursing facilities, I think that the virus will continue, being spread within nursing homes. And then as you move into sort of the flu season, the issue of people bringing it out could start back. And to put it more positively, if we're thinking of what should we do, how should we be investing, I think if we had an effective national testing strategy backed up by enough money, there's a chance that if we did a great job of asymptomatic testing in skilled nursing facilities, that we might actually be able to drive the R naught below one for the entire country. You know, that's a testable hypothesis, but it seems like our country has trouble focusing, and we've sort of lost interest, and people are moving back to normal. One thing about skilled nursing facilities is they are a place, and we could focus there. And I think from both a public health standpoint, but also from a protecting the most vulnerable members of society standpoint, that is really where our testing energy needs to go.
Well, tell me more about the value of testing and how that would even help in this case.
So there's a lot of evidence of people being asymptomatic, meaning they don't feel sick, but they have the coronavirus. And so if they're not sick, then they're spreading it unknowingly. All nursing homes, all, you know, places where elderly folks are living are requiring visitors and workers to take their temperature. And that makes sense. If you have a temperature, you shouldn't be going into a place where lots of elderly folks or at-risk folks are living. But because people are carrying it asymptomatically, if you're not testing continuously and on a somewhat routine nature, that's the only way to catch those cases. So, the federal government, there's a report that was, I think, leaked or maybe trial ballooned yesterday evening that basically recommended that all workers in skilled nursing facilities nationally should be tested at least weekly, whether they feel sick or not.
Well, again, I wonder what that same report suggested. Well, I guess it cited a different report that may have been aspirational, more than concrete, but the idea right. that we should go from 3 million tests a week in the United States to 30 million, and that would get us somewhere. But so, first of all, how do you get from 3 to 30 with any kind of reasonable confidence that you've got good results? But the other question I have for you is testing weekly enough? If I'm a healthcare worker and I went to work today at 9 and I went home at 5 and you tested me, can I get the virus between 5 p.m. and 9 a.m. the next morning? Don't you have to test me every day and get the results? I mean, I'm sort of questioning how this really works, practically speaking.
Yes. So the answer to the first question is lots of money, meaning that's how we would go from a plan for 3 million tests a week to 30 million. And just to give you an example of what that would mean for North Carolina, this report says North Carolina's goal for testing in June should be 300,000 tests done in June. And as of today, we've done 350,000 tests cumulatively. So this is an incredible ramp up. So the part of the report that said we need public-private partnership, fully agree with that. It's just the amount of money that it's going to take. The federal government is going to have to seed it. But back to the question of testing. From a public health perspective, what you're trying to do is harm reduction, which is drive the risk down. To control the epidemic, we don't have to drive it to zero. We have to drive the number that individuals infect below one. And so if you have weekly testing or biweekly testing or every other day testing, no testing is going to be perfect, but by doing it on a focused way, the idea is that you drive down the risk and the harm. So, I agree with sort of a premise of your question, which is there's so much we do not know about this virus. So, as we are rolling out universal testing in skilled nursing facilities, we really need to do it in a way that builds evidence base and shows, for example, like which test, how often should it be done. How long does a worker who tests positive need to stay out of work before they can go back? Is there a way that testing can allow family members to go back to their loved ones' bedside within nursing homes? So we not only need to test, which we do, but we need to do it in a way that builds evidence so we learn how to do this better, because we're probably going to be dealing with this for months or perhaps even years.
Yeah, and the other evidence and things you want to know is there a latency period of time between infection and the time a patient begins to shed the virus and all those sort of things, and when were they infected? Yes. So all of that would be great if we had the money to do the research. Now, let's get back to the testing. What would it cost? Because, again, this Department of Health and Human Services report that came out or has been leaked didn't talk about money. It just talked about, you know, one of the things we should do, and it talked about government support for and assistance in, but not money. So what would this cost, just the testing alone, to get us where we belong?
Yes. So they talked about the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Act, provided $11 billion to states for ramping up testing. Tests, PPE, infrastructure, hiring contact testers, and whatnot. And so $11 billion is a lot of money, but there's a recent estimate that it would cost $25 billion a year to simply test every person living in a skilled nursing facility and every worker in a skilled nursing facility once per week. So that's just skilled nursing facilities. That's not assisted living. That's not other congregate living homes. That's not dealing with universities. That's not dealing with the general need to ramp up. So that's $25 billion a year. And so I think probably I was doing a back of the envelope estimate. It's probably the federal government's put in $11 billion. We probably need to add a zero to that. So it's probably, let's just say for round numbers, $100 billion a year is needed at least. If we're talking about North Carolina, the cost of testing every SNF resident, skilled nursing facility resident and worker in a skilled nursing facility is about $600 to $650 million. Using the same 10x, that'd be about $6.5 billion per year. So the magnitudes of these sums are not going to be able to be borne by states, which, you know, can't run deficits. You know, government is for market failures and big disasters, and this is a big disaster. My granddaddy used to say anything about the future to note some uncertainty. He'd say, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. And the creek is out of the banks now.
Yeah. Well, so the question is, even if you spent that money, do we have the infrastructure to process the tests?
I think the money as a guarantee is going to be the key to getting the infrastructure to process the tests, because it's being heard that there's excess testing capacity right around this area, including at a place like Duke. Leaving Duke aside, but thinking about a private laboratory, they very reasonably are worried, if we do this testing, who's going to pay us for it, because they're a business. So with money promised or guaranteed, we need something like a guaranteed amount per test that will be paid by the federal government. And that is the way we will, ramp up testing.
Very briefly, very, very briefly, can you give us a sense of how private institutions are trying to gather evidence for these best methods that you talked about?
At Duke, we are talking about how to study ourselves in the pandemic, both from a testing perspective and also understanding how this is affecting workers. So I think a lot of places are doing that. I mean, we're a research university, and we're trying to understand Duke's employees as really a microcosm of the economy.
Don Taylor, a professor of public policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke. Don, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.